just trudging along, and there was kind of a bunch of us girls kind of together there toward the end. And I know we looked ridiculous because our faces were just blood red, no rouge, just blood red. And this guy came by in a pickup truck, and he didn't have air conditioning, and, you know, he didn't roll his windows up to make us think he did like we used to when we were kids. We wanted people to think we had an air-conditioned car. We roll the windows up and sweat to the high heaven. And, well, it's a dead giveaway when you roll the windows down. So, anyway, his window was down, and, I mean, he hung his big old ugly head out the window and laughed as loud as he could. I mean, I could hear him. He just was laughing at us. Pull his little head back in, and when I tell you, the bottom of his pickup truck fell out. I don't know a lot about trucks, so I don't know what it was, but it was like the guts of it just fell on the concrete. The loudest, most horrible sounds you'd ever want to hear. Well, then his face was the color of ours. And he just chugged on off, and sparks were like flying all out. And I said, wait a minute, man, if I'd have had 12 stones, I'd have put them up, but I didn't have anything. I said, just stop. I want to do something. I just stopped in the middle of that sidewalk, and I just looked up. And I said, God, that's the first time you've ever done anything on time. So that's just to say, I think like you think. He doesn't wear watches, he has no calendar, and he doesn't take suggestions well. Because I don't only tell him what to do, I tell him when to do it, and then I tell him how to do it, and he totally ignores it all. So what I want to speak to you today about kind of has to do with this. When my grandmother Donahue was dying, literally, in the hospital, that's who he was talking about, my grandmother, she had four children. Three of them were in the church, and one of them had never been, and smoked, just chain smoked. Uncle Eb smoked like a, just solid all the time. So Aunt Em, that's Sister O'Brien, you would know her like that, she leaned over Mother's mom's bed, and she said, Mother, I can't help but worry about Eb, because Mom had just told everybody, you know, that everything was just fine. And so Aunt Em said, well, Mama, what about Eb? And so my grandmother said, don't worry about him. It's taken care of. And Aunt Em said, well, Mother, he only goes to church with me on Easter. He never goes to church. She said, how do you want us to handle this when you're gone? And my grandmother said, don't worry about Eb. It's all taken care of. And then she just kind of leaned back and she said, now I'm ready to go home. And she did. It didn't look like it was all right. It didn't look like it was taken care of. But somewhere back there in her yesterdays, she had gotten a confirmation and a promise from a God that could not, would not, never did lie. And she just laid down in that promise and said, don't worry about Eb. It's taken care of. And you know what? In a year or two, it really actually was. And he's been in church all of those, about 34 years now, because she got a promise. And she held on, and she rested in it. To add validity to what I'm going to say tonight. Today, I'm going to get Merle to read to you the text of what I want to talk about today.
Psalms chapter 105, beginning with verse 17. He sent a man before them, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron until the time that his word came. The word of the Lord tried him. The New American Standard Version, that last scripture reads like this: until the time that his word came to pass, the word of the Lord tried him.
Who in the world are those millions of people walking into Canaan? I've never seen so many people in my whole life. Who are they? Oh, you don't know about that. That's Abraham's kids. Abraham's kids. Yeah, all of them. Are you serious? Serious. Well, how did this happen? Well, one day God spoke to him and told him that he would be the father of many nations. And, oh, man, I wish God would do that for me. You do? Are you sure? Well, yeah, but what do you mean? Are you sure that you would want to walk the road that Abraham walked in order to have these kids going into Canaan? What would I have done, and what would you have done, if when the promise came, there was such a state of impossibility? Could I, would I have clutched that promise to me and held it? I don't know. I don't know. He didn't trust me with that. And once my promise came, if he told me to take my promise to the top of a mountain and to kill it and burn it and offer it, would I have had what it took to have walked every step of the road that he walked? I don't know. You see, this is what people sometimes fail to negotiate. They want to get real tight with God. And they want God to tell them things. And then when he tells them something on Friday and it has not come to pass by Sunday, they want to turn on him as though he has lied to them. Can you imagine how Joseph felt? He's just been out there in his pretty little coat telling these guys about all this stuff, bowing and stars and all this stuff. And he's innocent in it. Maybe he shouldn't have told it. I don't know. But, I mean, he did tell it. It wasn't anything that offensive that they should have sold him to an Egyptian caravan, but they did. I wonder, once he was bumping along on this caravan when he barely escaped his life in the pit, I wonder if he just kind of looked up to where the dream had come from and just said to the giver of the dream, what did you mean? This is totally opposite of anything that you showed to me. And then he's up there and all of a sudden, well, he's kind of lifted up and, oh, you did mean it, didn't you? Yeah, Potiphar is, he's taken me in and he loves me now and he respects me and here I am. And then here comes his wife and you know the story, and he left the coat behind and all of a sudden the lie was told. And it's like, did you actually mean it? This dungeon is mighty dark And it's mighty lonesome down here. But what we have to understand is the word of the Lord tried him until the word of the Lord was fulfilled, until it came to pass in him. And I've heard Merle say this before, that when his brothers did come, and he had his chance to get even with them, he had been so tempered by the road that God had chosen for him to walk, that by the time they were bowing, he knew that instead of reaching for a sword, which is what most people would have done, the tempering made him reach for the grain sack instead. And he supplied their needs. But I wonder if they had come immediately after selling him into Egypt and his first elevation in Potiphar's house. I wonder if everything was out of him that needed to come out. If they had come for help then, how would he have responded to their plea for help? And there is poor Mary. You know, she's, I think I understand that in the year 2000, she's going to enter the redemptive group. That made me so happy. It did. Let me tell you why. Because they've already come up with three. You know, and I know they love Mary, you know who they are. And so I thought, they've so established this three, this Father, this Son, and this Holy Ghost. And what are their followers going to do when all of a sudden, this late in the game, they add a fourth one, that she'll have redemptive powers? That's what they're planning. And I loved it because it kind of messed up something. You know what I'm saying? I just love that. And God lets us do that sometimes. But here is Mary with a promise. You know, who's going to believe her? What is she, like 15, 16 years old, going around pregnant? I mean, who's going to believe her? Nobody. I mean, she's a good girl in the community, and she's well respected. But I mean, you know, she's not married, and she's just a teenager. And I mean, it's just kind of hard to fall for those kind of stories. Why did God put her in that? To me, that was just a little bit, I don't know. But do you understand that before she was vindicated? Do you understand that she had to wait 30 years? 30 years before that wedding feast. Now, there was one time when God said to her, he said, come here, Mary. This is not really it, but I got a little window. And just in case that you're losing hope, I know that you know you don't just have an ordinary boy, but so that you don't lose hope, come here. I want you to look through this window. Look in there. You see where all those guys that are supposed to know everything, all these little Sanhedrin and scholars and scribes and Pharisees, do you see where they're sitting? Look who's standing in the middle of them. And listen, he's got them all going. You hear? Listen. And she was aggravated at him for running off, but don't tell me she wasn't so proud that he was in there just kind of, you know. I think she had to be. So she just backs away and she said, yeah, really is an extraordinary boy, isn't he? But then they were at the wedding, 30 years old, and she goes up to him. It's like, dear God, how long do you wait before you prove that what happened to me was all legit, you know? And she says, not trying to butt in here, but did you know that's out of wine? You know, when you tell God somebody's out of something, you know, I guess you do feel kind of silly. And he just kind of acted pretty rude, I think. He said, well, don't mess with me, woman. He said, it ain't time for me yet. But you know what she did? Sometimes women know things, and sometimes mothers know things. And I guess it was hard for him to make that step over into that what was waiting for him, because he knew that once he took that step, you have to remember Jesus was a human being. He wasn't just God. And once you take that step over, there's no turning back then. I mean, it's straight from here to Golgotha, and he knew that. And so she goes over to the men, and she said, you see that guy over there? Listen, if he tells you to do something, just do it. It might sound kind of goofy, but just do it. And sure enough, he did, and they did. And here comes the report from the governor of the feast. The best wine, they say, was kept until the last, and that's never happened before. And then all of a sudden it was, yes, yes, finally, after 30 years and 9 months, what you actually told me before this son was ever conceived in me, it's really, really real. And well, you just think, like, poor little old David, just calling him in from out there at the sheep coach, you know, and pouring oil on his head, and okay, you're a king. Really? Let's see. What can we do about these stinky clothes? Oh, nothing. No. Just going back out there where you were. See, that throws people off. When God tells you that your ministry's fixing to really take off, and then he sends you back to that little hovel where you were, that confuses people. Well, so he's just out there, you know, playing his little harp and singing songs. Well, if this is what kings do, I'll just play the harp and sing. But there was something about that heart that made God just come and sit on the hillside at night and be his audience and listen to him. He was so intrigued with this boy. Well, then finally, you know, he does get over to Saul's house, and you know, he plays music for him. Well, you know, if this is what real kings do, they just play music for other kings. Well, then I guess I'm kindly one. And then he's running for his life. And you know what was really neat to me? The other day I was listening to, I guess it must be somewhere in Samuel. You guys will know that better than I will. I was listening to the Bible, and you remember the time he cut part of his skirt off, part of Saul's skirt off, and he was all real sorry about that and stuff. And when Saul got away, and he went out, and he hollered at him, and he showed him the clothes, and he was even sorry. He had, you know, he thought he was kind of acting smart aleck, I guess, to even do that. But it was that gesture that Saul turned around and he said, David, my son, he called him my son. He said, yeah, you're going to take the throne after me. There was something about not his talent, not his musical ability, not his warring ability to kill tens of thousands, but his attitude convinced Saul that this boy was going to be the next king. Attitude is everything. But it's those in-between times when the horn of oil is poured on your head. It's all that running for your life and tending to sheep and being hunted down like a dog before the crown ever comes to your head. It's that in-between time that separates those who can from those who can't. It's that promise and the time between that promise and the fulfillment of that promise when God said, take that promise to the top of the mountain and kill it. It's those times when the word of the Lord that has come to you comes to try you until it's fulfilled. That's a long time. And that's what puts a lot of us out of the game. There are people in this room here today. God has confirmed to you in prayer. He's confirmed to you through his word. And you may not believe in stuff like this, but I just happen to be a believer in the word of God. So I believe this. I do actually believe that you can be praying and God can speak to your mind and he can give you a promise so clear and so profound that hell couldn't burn it out of you. I believe that. But don't think it was given to you to make you sit up on a pedestal and say, I have a promise. Ha, 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 ha. I have a promise. It'll be here tomorrow. No, probably not. It is something to find out a couple of things. First of all, you don't know yourself. Now, he knows you, but you don't know yourself. And if ever in your life you ever said, God, save me at any cost. Ooh, dangerous words, but smart words. Because anything's cheap when you consider being lost as the alternative. But when he starts cutting away and whittling away, aye, and burning out, aye, ooh, it hurts. Yikes, that hurts. It's part of the process, and it has to happen. And no matter what he told you you were going to become, you are not going to become that Joseph until you're ready. You will not wear that crown, David, until all the attitudes are in alignment with him. So whatever he's doing, don't get mad at him. Don't get upset with him. You don't want it early. You want it on time. And you know, sometimes it comes and you don't even know it. Sometimes, you know, you're staring a promise right in the face and don't even know it. For instance, Elam and Rebecca sank down in their chairs over tea by the fire. And Elam said, you know what? This has, I hate Rome and I hate taxes, but man, this has been good for us today. Hotel's full. No rooms are vacant tonight. We got our no vacancy sign lit up out there. Boy, you know what's going to be good one day. Gonna come, and buddy, when he comes, everything's gonna be different. Old Rome is gonna fall flat on her face, and he's just bragging about when this Messiah comes. Oh no, surely not. And he goes to the door and he says, I'm so sorry, I can see that you're in trouble, but you know what, there's not a room in this house. But you can go to the barn. And there's a manger. It's got some hay in it. It'll serve as a cradle. And he calls for one of the little boys that help around there and said, take these guys out there to the barn. And he goes back and sits down and talks about the Messiah and when he comes and how different it'll be. Never knowing that when he goes to sleep that that in his barn, a baby will come, that a star will shine, and men will come from the east, and shepherds will come in from the field. And everybody will come in there and know it, but he won't ever know it. He never knows that on his property, the Messiah came. Just take those guys that were in there that day, and they're just, You know, they're just talking around about the law and the scriptures and Moses and Abraham and all this kind of stuff, and talking about, man, if when a Messiah gets here, buddy, he's going to smash Rome, and I can't wait till he comes. And this kid kind of wanders in the room and just standing over there in the corner, and what is it you want, little boy? And he starts asking them questions, and they don't know the answers to it. And then they're all confused and confounded, and all of a sudden they look at each other and said, "Woo, this is kind of a different little guy, isn't it? It's not like your usual little 12-year-old. And so the little 12-year-old gets called by his mom, and he goes out of the room, and they go back to talking about the Messiah again. And when he comes, he's going to smash Rome. And they never know that they just had a conversation with him. They don't have a clue that he was just... So, you know, sometimes you can have a preconceived idea of how things are going to be, and your answer can actually come, and you'll never know it. I remember when Merle and I, we were in Lake Charles, and we're still there, and when we first got there, and we were just doing everything we could, and, you know, we had some buses running and all that. Well, one Easter Sunday morning, I had just told God, you know, what all I wanted him to do. I put in my order, and it was, I didn't think it was selfish, because it was just strictly for a revival. It was just for souls, so I didn't feel like that was a bad request. And I told him, I said, I remember telling him this one afternoon, I said, now, you may not send this year, next year, I don't know when you're going to do it, but I just want to tell you that I'm going to be here worrying you, beating on the door, pecking on the window, whatever I have to do, I'm going to be worrying you till I get it. So, you know, just be willing to put up with me. That's all I'm asking you. And one night I was at an all-night prayer meeting at the church, and it was about, I guess about 1:30 in the morning. I know exactly what I was wearing. I know where I was praying. I know we're not in that building anymore, but I know exactly where I was. And when I asked him, I said, I know you're going to do some great things, but I said, could you just give me a sneak preview of what it's going to be like in the end when you actually do what you promised you would do? And you know what he said? And I never forgot this, because I wasn't real used to God talking to me. You know, he still don't say a whole lot to me, but sometimes he does. And that morning, it was so clear. He just simply said, he didn't say you wouldn't, but he said, you couldn't believe it if I told you. And you know, from that point of the trip to this one, I've seen enough that actually that part I know was right, because I've seen things I couldn't have believed if he'd have told me that night. But one Easter Sunday morning after that, the building is jam-packed, and we're fixing to start Easter Sunday morning service. And all of a sudden, there is a scream from the baptistry area. There's a couple in church. They teach Sunday school. They were in a pre-lesson session with their superintendent, and their little girl, who was 21 months old, I don't know how she did it. There are two locked doors that you had to go through and then climb a flight of steps to get to the baptistry. But they found their baby floating in our baptistry in front of a jam-packed house on Easter Sunday morning. When she was taken to the side over there, we had several RNs in the church. Everybody was working with her. And my husband said that until that day, he had never actually heard the devil laugh. But he said, while I stood there over the lifeless body of that little girl, waiting for the ambulance to come, the devil started laughing, and he said, you thought she was going to do some big things, didn't you? I tell you what, I'm going to make you the laughing stock of Lake Charles. I will have your name and your church name smeared all over the front page of the American press. And your church will be a hiss and a byword in this city. In fact, in this entire parish, maybe in this whole state, why, you'll be known all over the nation for the stupidity and the neglect or whatever they want to call you. Nobody's going to come to your church. You got all those buses out there. Do you think somebody's going to let their kid ride your bus to this church? And he said, he laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And I just stood there and said, God, I only know what you said. Over that one. But you know what God did? One more time, he covered for us like he does so many times. You know, sometimes you're actually doing things in your pulpit and you don't even know what you're doing. You're saying things and you have no clue why you're saying them, because you don't have a clue what needs are sitting in your congregation. And it's just God just covering and making up all the deficits. That's the reason it doesn't do any of us any good to ever think we did very good, you know? Man, I really did it tonight. Maybe not. Because if you'd have tried it by yourself, maybe it wouldn't have been so hot. But somehow he just steps in there and he says, no, I'm not going to let you think of what you were going to say, because what you had planned to say this afternoon would have messed up a whole bunch of stuff. So in that area, you're going to get amnesia, and I'm going to put something else in there that you had no intention of saying, and once you say it, you'll think, dear God, why did I say that? You see what I mean? He's just covering. So he covered for us, and we just kept going right along. And we had so outgrown that church until it was daresome to even bring a visitor. There was nowhere to put them. I mean, the people were jammed up against the pulpit. He had looked for property. There was no property, because we're not the only church in our city. And there was nowhere that wouldn't infringe on somebody else. Well, that's all a long story. He had gotten configurations from architects to try to add more there where we were, and nothing would work. And one day he was driving the freeway, and I've just heard him tell this so many times, and he was weeping, and he said, God, I feel like a slothful servant. I don't think these people actually think I want to build, but I do, and I know that we can't even have a revival at this point because there's nowhere to put anybody. And he said, if there's something in this city that you have reserved for us, he said, would you please quickly bring it to us? It wasn't but about a week or two later, we were driving down the same street that our church was on, and we saw hidden up in the bushes a little sign that said, for sale. What was it? 9.5 acres. It was fronting Interstate 10. The back of it was on Opelousas Street, and the side of it was on Highway 171, which is the north and south route in Louisiana. And he said, oh dear God, they will be asking at least $100,000 an acre with this being on I-10. Well, anyway, the next morning, it was hardly time for the people to wake up, and he was ringing their phone. And would you believe that all of that property, what did we pay for it? $350,000, right on Interstate 10. And the neat part of it was that the owners had died 30 years before that, when his dad had come to Lake Charles. Isn't that correct? And they had kept this piece of property, and they'd had Holiday Inns and I don't know how many motels, of course, that wanted to buy that because it was on the interstate. But this old lady had a little thing in her head about motels. She thought they were houses of ill repute. And so she had it established, and they are, I guess. she had it established with her family that whatever they did, they would never sell the old homestead to a motel. Is that cute? And she, it was kind of their wish that if a church was to ever want it, well, a church did want it, and a church got it. And it wasn't too long after we purchased the property. Merle's preaching the senior youth camp, and he preaches at night, and he comes back to the apartment, and he's in the floor in so much pain that he can hardly live. And so Brother Tenney says to him, Merle, and, you know, he always minds his pastor. I hope you guys do that too. I think his name is Thomas. Yeah, that's right. And so his pastor said, Merle, when you get home, go immediately and find out what this is. So we did, Monday or Tuesday, very first part of the week, and they found a tumor that they assumed was malignant. And they did surgery that very week. I mean, it was nothing that was prolonged, and it was malignant. And when the surgeon came out and did his fist did not look like my fist. I mean, he was a bruiser. And he said the tumor was as big as my fist. And he said it was lymphatic. And when he said lymphatic, I just left the room. I just left and went off by myself, because I knew that that meant it was all over the lymph system, which that's it. And they pronounced him with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. It was just a very short time after that his dad was in the hospital for gallbladder surgery, and he just died. We didn't know it, but his heart was defective, and his heart just played out. Merle was back in there with kidney stones. And even before that, he hadn't even preached in 6 months because something was wrong with his voice. He couldn't sing. He could make some little sounds, but when he tried to sing, one night he just said, Joan, I've stood as long as I can. I'm going to see if I can climb the scale. And so he started up, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, di, di, di. And when he would go up, it would start sliding down. And Vonnie was across the hall in her room, and she just came screaming into the room because he was doing it loud. And she said, Mother, there's a cow in the front yard. Well, I mean, I'm not scared of cows, but she is, because she never lived around. And I said, well, no, baby. I said, that was Daddy trying to sing. And she was laughing, but tears were pouring down her face while she was laughing. I mean, that's how bad it was. Merle Ewing singing, sounding like a cow. I mean, dream of it, you know? And then he had a blood clot, and he was just, I mean, all this stuff is just kind of piling up after this big old purchase of this big old property. And you know what I did? I came to dislike the property. I didn't like it. And we had to go over an overpass that passes over I-10. And the property was to my right. And just over that, at the light, we took a left to our old church. And it got to where that piece of property had become so expensive to me, I wouldn't look at it. I didn't even want to see it. I didn't care anything about a promise. All I knew was the price tag on that promise had been so big, I didn't want to pay it. And I would turn my head the opposite way and refuse to look at what actually was the answer to our dream and to our promise. But I hated it. But I guess all is well that turns out well. And so he's here. And that was in 81. And this is 98. And the church is there. Would you believe that the day that we marched down there from the old church, when we got inside, the building was almost full? And I looked at Ron, I said, oh, my God, I'm so tired. Did we underbuild? Are we going to have to build again? Keep dreaming, Joan. The oil crisis hit. secretary, we were going to pay for the church in 5 years, the way things were going when we built. The secretary and I took our church phone book down one day, and by head count, there were 300 that had exited the door. That's a church, you know, 300. That's only one time we went through the book. We went through it another time, and there were more. And it's like, okay, good job, God. Got me with this $1.2 million debt. You got me with this 14,400 and something. Well, just say 14,000. That's a lot of money to me a month. That was the note every month, and 300 just ran out the door. Good joke, God. Love that. Who's going to pay for it? You know what I heard through the grapevine? Grapevines are so keen. They know a lot. I heard we went bankrupt and lost the church. Did you hear that? I heard that. But you know what we actually did? We never missed a note and paid it off 2 years ahead of schedule. But he will try you to the nth degree. And you know, sometimes God makes, he makes promises to us. And we don't think a lot about it when he makes them. But then when you start living it out in those in-between times, sometimes you are actually clawing just away and not be around, you know, for him. I ask him to take you while you're ready to go. And I said that one time in a women's prayer meeting, and a woman walked up to me and she said, well, obviously you don't love your kids like I do. And I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, I certainly wouldn't pray a prayer like that. She said, I love my kids far too much to go out on a limb like that. And I said, well, frankly, I love mine too much to not go out on the limb. Obviously, you've never weighed the difference in heaven and hell. You must not know. And I just dropped it. And everything is like, it's sailing okay. And one day our son says, I'm going, my family's going with me, and we're going to Denver. Okay. To what? Well, it's this huge church, this huge charismatic church. And you know, it's like everything in you wants to start kicking and pawing and scratching and fighting. And God covered for me. He jumped right between me and whatever words were fixing to come out, and I just said, oh, okay. That's a dumb thing to say. When everything in you is boiling and fighting and screaming and kicking and jumping, just to say, oh, okay. But a few days before that, I had been having a prayer meeting. And I took an 8x10 picture of my son and his family that was sitting on one of the tables in my living room. And I put it like this in my hand. And I held it up and I said, do you see this? Do you know who these people are in this picture? Well, I want to let you know that the biggest one in there, the oldest one, I gave him away to you a long time ago. I gave him away twice. I gave him away in a ceremonious thing in a church, but I gave him away by his little bassinet one night when it was nobody but me and you and him. And I said, I'm not going to take it back, but I just wondered, do you see this? laid the picture down, and this was what God said to me. He said, hand him over to me. I said, what are you talking about? I did do that. He said, no, you didn't. I said, yes, I did. I'm like arguing with God Almighty. I said, don't you remember my daddy was praying over him? And we didn't hand him over, and listen to this, and back off. I said, you mean just stand here and just watch all this and don't do anything? Right. Well, who's gonna handle it if I don't? Who's going to scream and cry and beat on the walls and climb the walls and yell at you and tell you what to do if you make me back off and shut up? I won't say anything to him, but can I scream at you? No. I said, hand him over and back off. I'll hand him back one day, but you be quiet until I do. Oh. God, it's like watching a movie, a horror movie, that you never ever thought you would ever look at this. I'm not looking at this. I am not seeing this. I am not being calm while this is going on. What's wrong with me? Well, to make a long story short, I would never want to bore you with the gory details of the story, but the children came in June, and he was still trying to put a marriage back together that had actually ended in January. And finally, in August, he came. And we met him at the airport, and I hadn't seen him. I just looked, and his hair was like, you know, kind of right down here, and he didn't have any light on in his head. You know what I'm saying? It was like dark inside, and his eyes were dull, and he looked like a man with no hope. And he didn't look like I wanted him to look, but it was my boy, and he was home. So I was glad, and I took him, and I hugged him. And since that time, that's been, I don't know, 4.5 years ago. And we sent the kids back to go to school, but then they returned. So anyway, the three of them live in our house, and we're now a family of five. And it amazes me when I hear him talk, because I'm thinking, you didn't know that before you went to hell and back, did you? You didn't know that until God humiliated you and smashed you in the ground and ground you to powder. You didn't know all that stuff about God, did you? And then I remembered God saying, take your hands off and hand him over to me and back off. And I did. And now, when I hear him talk, when I hear him sing, when I hear projects that he's put together, just like this one you heard tonight, in music, I'm thinking, God, what a price tag. I don't actually think it was necessary, but if it was necessary for him, well, I don't, you know, it's just stuff you don't know. But always be careful and take your promise that God gives to you and hold it to you real, real close. Take it to the bank if you want to. Lay down on it. Rest in it. Go to sleep on it. You know how I went to sleep for hundreds of nights? The last thing that I would just say, because I couldn't read myself to sleep anymore, I would just say, He giveth His beloved sleep. 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 And I'd fall asleep because He let me. God has spoken some beautiful things to you folks who are sitting here today. He's spoken some profound things to you. And if you're toying with the idea, or if you're weary of holding the memory of the oil that was poured on your head, or if you're weary of just trying to remember, what did that angel say? Blessed art thou amongst women. What? If you're tired trying to remember that, or if you're tired, Father of many nations, it's impossible. No, Father of many nations, I can't. It's Father of many. If you're tired trying to remember that, just remember, He said it, and lay down in it, because it's coming. It's coming. Maybe not like I told Him that day when the bottom fell out of the pickup truck. That meant this is the first time you ever did anything when I wanted you to do it. But on time, oh yes, oh yes. Late, never, never. Cancel, no. Not as long as you live, and not as long as God lives, and not as long as there's a heaven, and not as long as God is the ruler over this universe. Never, never, never will He turn back on His word. And if in your heart, in your prayer, in the secret time, or through a scripture, or a man of God said it to you, or someone preached a sermon when you said, tonight, speak to me. If it's ever happened to you and He has given to you something that you have as yet not received, I want you to stand to your feet now and say, it is coming. It is coming. It is coming.